A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
in time
concentrate on
space.
Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 355. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about The Dark Side of the Sun. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This was a 1983 BBC serial with 6 one-hour episodes, and it gives us a mixture of a conspiracy theory with some supernatural and sort of psychic and telepathic elements and things pointing back to a plot spreading across history. And it's all set on the Greek island of Rhodes in a very sunny sort of look to things.
Yes, some interesting stuff going on in the sun of a Greek island. And there's quite a lot to talk about with this show, Brian. It's an interesting one for many reasons.
It really is.
So let's get to the setup. We have a renowned photographer, famous for his war photography, his photojournalism, his books. He's visiting the Greek island of Rhodes, as we've said, to work on a new book of images. And it seems like he's going to be capturing charming local scenes and taking delightful pictures in the sun. But of course, he stumbles across something, what appears to be a meeting taking place between very highly placed world politicians and leaders and bankers. Has he discovered some sort of plot? Can he get photographic evidence of this? Or will he fall foul of some strange powers that the conspirators may be able to use against him? And that sets us off in the first episode, Brian.
Yes, it does. And we get these interesting views of him sort of being away up on almost a clifftop, looking down at this meeting of different people happening that he's capturing and photographs. So interesting things going on there. So getting into the characters, Don Tierney, played by Patrick Mower, is a respected war photographer and photojournalist, clearly considered an excellent professional photographer. And he is working on this book that he's decided to capture photographs on the island of Rhodes. And Mower is this sort of action hero type actor from British TV doing something just a little bit different this time here.
Yes, and I think he's in long-running British soap Emmerdale now, Patrick Mower, but I'm just going to mention quickly the name of a famous real-life British photojournalist, Sir Don McCullen, a war photographer and photojournalist. Google image search him. You'll see that Patrick Mower has a very similar look to the very striking Don McCullen.
Yes, there does seem to be potentially a bit of influence there, doesn't there?
There does, yes. Now, Don's wife, Anne Tierney, played by Emily Richards, back in England, also a photographer, we get the impression perhaps just starting out in her career, starting to get some success with her own photography, but also beginning to realise that she may have some psychic, some telepathic abilities, which forms some of the supernatural elements and the reason we've been able to include this show in our roster.
Yes, her connection to her husband seems to be quite profound, and we have sort of questions about the exact nature of that. David Bascom, played by Christopher Schuller, is a young writer living on Rhodes, and he is doing research for a history book. He's a historian working on these things, and he speaks Greek and becomes a friend to Don and helps him out with things, and then goes on to help out and work with Anne as well.
Yes, and also another friend on the island for Anne is Dr. Ismini Christoyannis, played by Betty Arvaniti. She is, as I suggested, a doctor, a Greek psychiatrist, but also has her own telepathic abilities, which she can use to help Anne understand a little bit about what's going on as the plot develops and the supernatural themes start to come into this story.
Yes, absolutely. And the relationship between Anne Tierney and Ismini Christianos becomes an interesting part of this show as well. Raoul Lavallier, played by Peter Egan, is a charming but mysterious count living in a castle on Rhodes, and he seems to be the leader of a strange order with connections going back to the Knights Templar. And I think we can say, without giving anything away, that he is the villain of the piece, and I think an interesting one, too.
Yes, he is. Very suave and sophisticated performance by Peter Egan. And of course, he wouldn't be a villain if he didn't have a sort of sidekick, henchman, aide-de-camp, a character called Colonel Von Reitz, played by Michael Sheard, who, as we've suggested, Lavallier's right-hand man, but also very mysterious and threatening in his own right. And I made a note in our outline, Brian, that I just thought we should pause to acknowledge the great career of Michael Sheard, who, born 1938, died 2005, probably best known on British television for his long-running role as Mr. Bronson in Grange Hill. But, of course, he had 177 IMDb acting credits, 6 separate Doctor Who serials opposite 5 of the Doctors. And I gather, Brian, he also played opposite the 8th Doctor on Big Finish Audio as well.
Yes, that's right.
And often playing, at least in the movies, a villain. In particular, played Hitler, would you believe, a total of 5 times in his career, including, especially for us, in The Tomorrow People. But also he played Hitler in Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. And he was a bad guy in The Empire Strikes Back for Star Wars. So he almost managed what I've called the Julian Glover, Brian, which is a Doctor Who villain, a Bond villain, a Star Wars villain, and an Indiana Jones. I think he just misses out on the James Bond connection.
Yes, I think so. And he did have a wonderful career doing lots of interesting things. Worth noting, he also played, in addition to villains, a number of sort of very affable, sometimes hapless, supporting characters who were not villainous at all, who were good guys. I'm thinking of Lawrence Scarman in Doctor Who, The Pyramids of Mars. We saw him on British Invaders in The Invisible Man. So yeah, he did have some really nice stuff, and we haven't talked about him much, but worth noting that. And here we have Lavallier, the sort of main villain, being a bit like a Bond villain in that he's very charming and seems very nice and will invite people to dinner and this sort of thing. But we know behind that he's very threatening and villainous, where Michael Sheard's character is not hidden in that way at all. He is very threatening and not hiding that at all.
Straight up villain. The wonderful life of Michael Sheard.
Yes, indeed. So getting into what was happening a bit more, Don Tierney is working on this book of photography, and he starts to discover this conspiracy. Seeing these very well-connected people who you would not expect to be meeting on road, seeing them there and so on. And as we move into things, the focus shifts towards his wife, shifts to Anne Tierney. And she goes to Rhodes herself to work on Don's project. And we start getting into some of these supernatural types of things with her.
Yes, and we'll have Anne working with David and Ismini. They're both helping her understanding what's going on. We get increasingly this sort of element of telepathic communication, psychic flashes, possibly visions. And of course, as you said, Brian, we've got this almost Bond villain-like Raoul Lavallier, very smooth, very sophisticated, charming Anne, inviting her to dinner and elaborate masked balls. And he seems fascinated by her, and in particular her resemblance to an ancient portrait that he possesses of a figure from the Knights Templar past. He has this painting on one of those sort of almost religious icon type triptych little screens, and it's of course very much resembles Anne Tierney, and he is obviously intrigued and fascinated by her, so much so, Brian, that he's even, for some reason, managed to obtain her medical records for some reason. Why does he need those?
Yes, and we also see that there's a painting of one of his ancestors that looks suspiciously like him.
What could be going on there, we wonder?
Yes, indeed. So we should get into our production notes. The Dark Side of the Sun was written for television by Michael J. Byrd, who has a long television history, writing for things like Danger Man and Out of the Unknown, which we've talked about before. Also Secret Army and the Hammer House of Mystery and Suspense. So a lot of high-profile television work there. This was his fourth drama based on Mediterranean islands. He did things on Crete, on Cyprus, and also on Rhodes.
Yes, and they seem to be known, at least on the internet, as the Mediterranean Quartet. So that makes up, or is made up of, the Lotus Eaters from 1972, Who Pays the Ferryman from 1977, The Aphrodite Inheritance from 1979, and then this show that we're talking about at the moment. Now, I know that the first two were pretty straight-up dramas, but The Aphrodite Inheritance may also have some supernatural themes. You might wonder why we're perhaps going straight to the last one in the quartet, but as you'll find out in a moment from the availability, it's probably a good job we did.
Yes, it worked out for availability in this case.
Now, Michael J. Byrd, it's quite interesting. His own life seems a little bit like that portrayed by the character David Bascom in this series, in that he was himself a historian and writer who would go and live on these Mediterranean islands or in other parts of the world, big cities, other islands. He would assimilate their culture, their history, their language, and then write about them. And he would go on after this quartet to produce a similar show about a Norwegian island, which is called Maelstrom, 1985. Also, I believe, has got some haunting and supernatural stuff going on. So could be on our list of possibles. Who knows?
Yes, indeed.
And of course, you've mentioned, Brian, the history of the Knights Templar, and in particular, Byrd's interest in a character from Templar history called Fulks de Villeray, who was Grand Master of the Knights, but who was unfortunately removed from office and had some considerable difficulties. And so Michael Byrd taking some influence from the history of this religious movement.
Yes, and de Villeray's stronghold at Lindos was used for the exterior shots of Levalier's castle on Rhodes. So they were sort of bringing in some of the visuals that fit with those historical influences on the story as well. We also understand that Byrd may have been inspired by some of the theories in the book Holy Blood and the Holy Grail by Michael Bagent, Richard Lee, and Henry Lincoln. And that was published in 1982, so just a little bit earlier than this.
And I remember this being a big thing at the time, that book. This, for people who don't know, this was the book that claimed that Jesus had children with Mary Magdalene, and that their descendants, their bloodline, could be traced to a particular sort of line of families in modern France. Now, you may not be familiar with the original book from 1982, but you're probably familiar with Dan Brown's runaway bestseller, The Da Vinci Code, which used this idea, this theory, as part one of the main plot devices, and of course becomes a big budget film as well. I have to say, I'm not a fan of the book or the film at all, but hugely successful, Brian.
Yes, and certainly had a period of time there where it was very high profile.
Indeed. Now to be found, I think, a copy in every charity shop in the country. But anyway, Let's get back to The Dark Side of the Sun. Commissioned and produced for the BBC by Vere Lorimer, best known to us for directing episodes of Doomwatch and Blake 7, which he produced Blake 7 with David Maloney. So there's his British Invaders credentials for us.
Yes, he did some good work on Blake 7 for sure. And the exterior shots for The Dark Side of the Sun were filmed on location on Rhodes. So they really did want to get that imagery of the Greek island into this. And this was sort of a period in British television where dramas were starting to do more location work and more overseas location work to capture some of these destinations in different places.
Yes, I mean, travel was becoming much cheaper and more widely available. People were going to these exotic destinations, and I think a lot of the television shows from the 70s and 80s sort of reflect that, Brian. They were showing these sunny, glorious destinations as settings for dramas.
Yes, and I say overseas. A lot of it was really more crossing the channel and getting into continental Europe, but they were on various shows able to get some nice things captured, and this was certainly an example of that. The series was directed by David Askey, who had a long history of directing British television. Not really many genre shows apart from this one, but a lot of work as a director for sure.
And we've got some very distinctive Greek music for the series, composed by a very well-known composer and conductor, Stavros Exarchakos, who also went on to become a member of the European Parliament as well, and is thankfully still with us. Interesting that for some reason Greeks seem to have a history of, you know, their musicians and entertainers often becoming politicians as well. But anyway, he wrote this very distinctive Greek theme tune that sort of fits perfectly for this show.
It really does support what they're doing and support this sense of place of being there. The Dark Side of the Sun was broadcast on BBC One weekly from September 13th, 1983 through October 18th, 1983. Michael J. Byrd also wrote a novelization, and that was released on paperback in September 1983 to go along with the series.
And that's pretty much all we have about the production of this show. We know from some existing TV reviews from the time that probably the ratings and reviews were a bit disappointing. Reviewers commenting that it looked lovely to look at, but, you know, all the fun in the sun, but it was deeply confusing. And as if the BBC Radio Times genome search is correct, then it was never repeated. And it strikes me, Brian, that, you know, British television often had this long sort of reputation for lots of repeats. But so often, so few of these shows actually get a repeat, it seems. And that seems to be the case here for The Dark Side of the Sun.
Yes, there were certainly some things that would repeat, but there were a lot of things that were shown and did interesting things and didn't show up again. And that seems to be what happened here.
So, availability time. Here in Region 2, it was released on a BBC DVD in 2015, just the 6 episodes, no extras, on 2 discs, which it's now September as we record this, Brian, and I bought this back in March of this year, and sadly, since I bought it, it's already out of print, it seems, which is possibly the new British Invaders curse, it seems, at the moment, Brian. And of course, as a result, second-hand copies, the prices have gone through the roof, and it's become very expensive and difficult to get hold of.
Yes, that is unfortunate. Hopefully they'll bring this back into print for a little while in the not-too-distant future.
It doesn't seem to be on any streaming sites over here, but if it does turn up on BritBox, somebody please let us know. Fortunately, Michael J. Byrd's other TV series are still available. And I should say that when you're searching for this, there's a film starring Brad Pitt called The Dark Side of the Sun. That's not what you're looking for.
And there were also, I think there was an Italian production, and there was a documentary. There were a bunch of things that use that name. It's the 1983 BBC show is the one you want if you're looking for this.
But of course, in Region 1, I guess the situation is even worse then, Brian.
In Region 1, there is no release. So you'll be looking at importing something for this.
It's a shame.
Yes. That novelization, the paperback book, is around from secondhand retailers. So if you're interested in that, you might be able to find a copy pretty inexpensively, especially from the UK.
Okay, but as ever, we haven't read the book, but we have watched the show, and that's what we're going to concentrate on. So I guess that'll wrap us up for our first episode, Brian.
I think so.
Next time, we'll be back to look at the plot in a bit more detail. And we have to give a slight warning that there may be some spoilers next time for what we want to talk about. We'll discuss the supernatural elements that put this into our remit and give us a chance to cover this around Halloween time and look at some of the history behind the show.
Yes, absolutely. And some of the things that make this quite spooky while also being sort of very brightly lit outside in the sun, which is always an interesting combination. And of course, we will give our own ratings and reviews about what we thought of this as a DVD release. Until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com with all of our past episodes there. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there where we always have some good discussion going on.
Absolutely. You can also find us as part of the Voice of Geeks Network, which you'll find at VogNetwork.com, where you'll find several other related shows and lots of other interesting discussion going on as well. VogNetwork.com.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.